the chosen path. That night, I went to sleep in a haze of fear and grief. The music of my composition haunted my dreams. When I woke, I could still hear the measures I'd played so feverishly on the clavier, the notes hovering in the air. How Hyacinth would come to me now, I couldn't say. What if he had found some way to trick me again? Perhaps all he needed from me was to hear my composition. Perhaps he didn't need me to bring Vulfril to the kingdom. Without my composition to work on, without Vulfril at my side, all I could do was spend the day pacing, awaiting word from Papa, listening to the constant commotion in the streets, letting my thoughts spiral deeper and deeper. Mama and I did not attend church that Sunday. Finally, the day after, Papa came to visit us. I rushed to see him, anxious to ask about my brother, but I did not meet my father's eyes when I reached him. I simply curtsied, and then stood with my gaze pointed down.
"Vulfril has developed a cough," he said to my mother. "It is nothing serious yet."
A cough. My hands trembled against my dress. "How long do we stay in Vienna?" It was always Mama's first question.
"The Emperor has not responded to my inquiries," Papa said.
He looked defeated.
"The Archduchess is very ill. We will leave Vienna."
That was it then. We packed our things in a silent hurry, bid farewell to Herr Schmolliker and his wife, and headed into our waiting coach. When we went to the home of Papa's friend and helped Vulfril into the seat beside me, I saw that my brother's eyes had turned so dark that they looked black.
"I was in a city, Nunral."
His dream came back to me now, and I shivered at the truth of it.
"It was burning to the ground. The fire nipped at my skin, and the smoke blinded my eyes."
I took my brother's hand in mine and squeezed it tightly. "How is your cough?" I asked him as we headed on our way. Behind us, I could hear the city's cacophony of church bells and prayers and panic. Vulfril shrugged. Already he looked suspended between here and somewhere else.
"It is just a cough," he replied.
We left Vienna and their royal family behind us, then arrived in Olmütz, a small city on the edge of the Morava River, on a day full of rain. I sat opposite our father, although neither of us looked at the other. Papa was not a man of many words, but today he seemed even quieter than usual, and his lips stayed locked in a tight line across his face. He kept his eyes turned toward the windows. Once, when I looked away and could see him only through the corner of my vision, I thought I saw him stare at me. When I turned my eyes back to him, he had returned to his silent study of the rolling terrain. The room at our Olmütz Inn did not help Papa's mood. When he smelled the dampness of it and saw the smoke that poured from its stove, he threw his hands up and cursed loudly.
"God has punished my greed," he muttered.
Vulfril's cough grew worse from the rain and smoke, so that he kept us awake throughout the night with his fits. I could not sleep anyway, as the smoke forced my eyes to tear unabated. I held my breath for much of the next day. There was no clavier here, not even separate rooms for us. I had nothing to do, nothing to distract myself. All I could think of was the music I had played, of when Hyacinth would come calling for me, and the smile in his raspy, haunting voice. Vulfril continued to cough. His black eyes watered without pause. The next morning, I awoke to the sound of our door slamming shut. My father had left. "Where is Papa going?" I said to Mama as I sat up. Vulfril was not sleeping at my side. "Hurry and get dressed, Nunral," she said to me. Behind her, Vulfril swayed on his feet and shivered in his clothes. "We are moving to better rooms." We switched to a room with less dampness and smoke,
but by now it was already too late. Vufril had trouble breathing properly that evening, and by the time Sunday came and we were to attend church, Vufril had become delirious with a high fever. Mama hovered over him, distraught and teary-eyed, and Papa told her he would ask the cathedral's dean about my brother's condition. I already knew what would happen, although I did not say this to my parents. Hyacinth had found his way to my brother. The dean, an old friend of my father's from Salzburg, sent the doctor Josef Wolf to our inn straight away and confirmed that Vulfril had smallpox. We moved again to the dean's house. There, under the surveillance of Herr Wolf and my family, we watched helplessly as Vulfril's fever worsened and his eyes swelled shut with pain. That night, I dreamed again of the clavier sitting on the dark sands of the kingdom shores, and of Vulfril's milky, vacant eyes. I woke with tears streaking my face. Vulfril woke up crying one night, and as Mama rose from her slumber in a nearby chair and hurried to his side, he told her that he could not see. Even candlelight hurt his eyes so much that he kept them closed all the time. Red spots began to appear on his skin, slowly at first, and then more and more quickly, like a wildfire to an untouched forest. I could hardly recognize him through the smallpox rash. Whenever he burst into a fit of coughs, I thought it sounded like Hyacinth's laughter. I would look for him at night, but he did not appear to me. I woke the next night, trembling. From my open door, I could see candlelight still flickering in Vulfril's sick room. I rose then, wrapped my blanket around me, and made my way to him. Mama slept quietly in the chair at the corner of the room, while my father lay with his head in his arms at the writing desk. I saw an unfinished letter to Herr Hagenauer crushed beneath his elbow. I walked carefully, so that I would not wake them, and sat down beside Vulfril's bed. Through the flickering candlelight and the window pane, I could see the hints of floating shapes, the cloaked figures that seemed to haunt us in a way that others could not notice, waiting patiently beside the glass. I turned to look at Vulfril, who tossed and turned in his fitful sleep.
"Unroll," he whispered.
I blinked. Vulfril suddenly turned his head in my direction, although his eyes, still swollen shut, could not see me. Instinctively, I reached for his hand and pressed it between mine. His skin was hot to the touch. "I'm here, Vulfril," I said. He tried to smile, but the pain stopped him.
"You came to see me," he said.
I swallowed. "Of course," I said. "You are my brother."
"Do you think I will get better? Is the smallpox very bad?"
The weakness in his voice cracked my heart. "It is not so bad," I lied. The shapes outside the window grew larger, so that I could see their bony arms and long, spindled fingers. "The smallpox will disappear in just a few days." Vulfril shook his head. He did not believe me.
"I wish I could see you," he whispered.
His hand slipped out of mine and reached up for my face. I let him touch my cheek and held it there for him, so that he could feel the coolness of my skin. My music notebook called to me. I thought I could hear its notes coming from my room, fragments of my composition. A tingle ran through my body at the sound. Hyacinth. He had come to call. The time was near.
"Nunnerl,"
Vulfril said suddenly. He turned his face to me.
"I'm sorry about your compositions."
At that, I turned sharply back to him. "What?"
"I'm sorry,"
he whispered. I swallowed, afraid of what he might say next. "What do you mean?"
"The 6 sonatas that Papa took from you. He should not have done that."
I was silent. My hands pulled Vulfril's away from my cheek so that he could not feel the tremble of my jaw. How long ago was it that our father betrayed me?
I had tried to bury it away in my heart, didn't think Wulfril would ever speak aloud to me about it. Now the memory of it all came roaring back, stabbing so hard at me that I winced in pain. From the corner of my eye, I saw a small movement. A tiny patch of mushrooms was growing on the dresser top, right beneath the light of the candle. They were a shiny black and dotted with scarlet. Wulfril struggled to get closer to me.
"I didn't tell him, you know," he said. "I didn't tell Papa about your music. I did not think that he would ever find them, but he did, for he was searching for a pair of cufflinks he had lost. I could not stop him from going there."
He spoke frantically, as if he knew he was fading away. I patted his hand, clucking to him softly so that he would not work himself into a frenzy. "I know," I whispered. "It's all right."
"They are yours,"
Wulfril went on.
"And they are better than anything I could have written."
He took a deep breath.
"All I have ever wanted, Nonrul, was to be like you. It is still all I hope for. I need you to know. I need you to know."
He repeated it several times, urgent in his fever. "All I've ever wanted." And suddenly, I realized that here, kept safe within the small chest of my brother, was my wish all along. I'd despaired so much of ever seeing it come true, had spent so much effort turning toward my father for validation, that I'd never taken the time to look in Wulfril's direction for it. It was my wish not to be forgotten, to have a place within hearts when I was gone, to be remembered by the world. But it was my brother's wish to be like me. He was the one who handed me quill and ink. He was the one who remembered. Tears blurred my vision. All around us, vines had begun creeping up the walls and around the bedposts, their leaves a glittering black, their flowers tiny and white. "Nonrul," the whisper came, calling for me. The kingdom had finally come to claim my brother. Wulfril gave me a thoughtful expression. I hurriedly wiped away my tears. Although I knew he could not see them, he seemed to know I was crying.
"You did not look through the final volume," he said at last.
"No," I answered. "How could I? I saw your name printed on the cover."
"You did not see the final copy of Die Schuldigkeit either. I remember you walked out of the room complaining of the air."
I thought back to the oratorio we had written together. "I did not have the strength to see your signature on it."
"I did not sign either with my name, you know. I could not do it."
I continued to look at him, more surprised now than anything. Such a thought had never crossed my mind. "What did you sign them as, then?"
"I signed them Mozart."
I leaned forward. "Just Mozart?"
"Yes, for both of us. We are both Mozart, are we not?"
Wulfril paused and made a gesture with his hands, as if to write something down. I broke out of my thoughts long enough to see it, then rose and walked over to where Papa slumped on the writing desk. I carefully took the quill and inkwell, my hands brushing past ivy leaves and tendrils as I did, and then a sheet of paper. I returned to Wulfril's side. With both hands, I helped him find the quill and dip it in the inkwell. He touched the paper, then pressed the quill down. "Mozart." He smiled at me. I was too stunned to say anything in return. I simply leaned closer, then laid my head gently against his swollen cheek. His breathing became shallower, a hissing tide between lulls. I hummed for him. He tightened his grip on my hand. The glow of blue fireflies had begun to flood the room, darting impatiently from one place to the next. This was the moment Hyacinth had been waiting for. I could hear him calling for me, the music of my composition seeping into the air and his whispers accompanying it.
Nonnerl, my Fräulein, it is time.
Wufferl was suspended between two worlds. The time had come to lead him out of this world forever and into the kingdom beyond. When he had fallen asleep, I took the quill and ink and placed them back on the writing desk. Then I left the sick room, returned to my own room, and found the music notebook tucked underneath my bed. I cradled it in one arm. Black mushrooms dotted the floor, but disappeared wherever my feet landed. I went to my brother's door. Then I passed it by and headed down to the main entrance. Nothing stirred in the night except the kingdom itself, which had begun to grow faster, its dark grasses lining the steps of the stairs, its poisonous vines and leaves suffocating the buildings. I could hardly feel my bare feet against the rain-soaked pavement of the street. The woods of the kingdom lined the side of the city, the path into them shrouded in black. I halted in my steps to gather my courage. My shadow wavered under silver light. I looked up to see the twin moons aligned at last with each other, forming a single bright disk in the sky. Then, I stepped onto the path and disappeared into the woods.